This is Dig and Swing, a volleyball podcast for everyday coaches. Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in again for another great topic and discussion. I'm your host, Sarah, and today we have Dan Mickle, who runs Soul Performance Academy, and we're going to talk about mental skills training. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell everybody why we should listen to you?
You shouldn't. I don't know why anyone would actually listen to me. I'm still kind of coming to terms with that. My name is Dan Mickle. I am the founder of Soul Performance Academy. And from an educational standpoint, I have a master's in sports psychology, and I'm finishing my second master's in learning technologies and media selections. And
no big deal.
That may sound like they don't have a lot in common, but I started to do a lot of remote learning with the sports psychology stuff. And I thought, well, why pay someone to design these courses in my education? And I went back and decided I'm going to learn how to do it. So while it says learning technologies, it's more about, it does have the tech side to it, but it's also more about methods of teaching and such. It's not just, you know, hardware and internet and all that. So, from the education standpoint, I've been coaching for over 25 years. That's a funny quick story. I was in 1992, I was 18 and got my first job coaching volleyball, and I was 18 coaching the girls that I just graduated with who were playing 18s, which would never happen today, obviously, in today's world. So it's been about 25 and plus years, and I'm currently also a Division III women's head coach. And I spend most of my time playing with people's heads and minds, trying to get better optimal performance.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I really wanted to bring you on, right now it's like this new trend of, I need to teach mental toughness to kids. And so I know that that's definitely something that you are pretty passionate about. And number two, you helped me kind of steer me in this direction of this podcast, because you did a podcast for your Cap 3 and gave me awesome, great advice. I just have to chuckle when I hear mental toughness, because I feel like I hear you in the back of my mind, like your eye twitching and going, it's not how it is. So why don't you tell me, like, what it feels like this started recently, this whole like phrase and caring about mental skills training. What are they really trying to say? And what are your thoughts on that?
There's a lot of thoughts. First, I guess I should explain why you brought up the me twitching. I'm not a huge fan of the mental toughness phrase. To me, it is the equivalent to muscle memory, which I can't stand.
I hate that phrase. I always say muscles don't have brains, and I want brains. I hate that phrase.
So you know exactly how I feel then when I hear the main reason. And BJ, this really started with a conversation I had with BJ about it a few years ago. And I feel like when you say mental toughness, I just have this image of someone banging their head against the wall, trying to solve a problem. You know, I'm going to run as hard as I can against this wall, and eventually I'm going to break through and be successful, when they could have really just opened the door and gone through the wall or around the wall or over the wall. And right. I try really hard to use the phrase mental flexibility. And it's just like anything else. I mess up and I do say mental toughness, or I'm reading a book and it's everywhere that says mental toughness. So sometimes I say it, and you know, it's a big joke trying to catch me saying it, sort of like Kessel and the word try.
Right.
but that's my main philosophy and thinking on it. I don't hate the word mental toughness. I just prefer it to be flexibility. I want people to have options, and that's what we're training in.
Right.
The other part of your question, it has definitely exploded recently. And I think that may be for two reasons. One, in youth sports in particular, it's a competitive world. And in our world, let's say volleyball, where you have two clubs in the same town and they're both charging $3,000 for kids to participate, what can you add in there that the other club isn't doing to try and get them in? And it's like, hey, let's add mental training, or you know, mental skills work. It's sort of like the boom that we saw a few years ago, where no one was doing like weightlifting and strength training in the club world. Yep. And now all of a sudden everyone has gyms you know, weight rooms in their gyms or memberships with their gyms. And that's now part of the program. So I think people are starting to come around to that. And people finally realize that there's a lot of talent in the world, but how we use the talent and how we fine tune that talent, not just the skill acquisition, but the use of that talent is what's making a difference. Do I think, for example, that Michael Jordan and LeBron James have same skill set physically? I do. I think from a basketball standpoint, they're probably pretty equal in what they can do physically. I think the difference is Michael Jordan had a mental level that's just completely different. And it's not that LeBron isn't working on it, and he's also very good at that. But I think that's what would separate the greats from the greatness. You know, it's that gap. And for me, when I was playing on the beach and, you know, trying to cut my teeth into the pro ranks, I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't the, you know, couldn't jump the highest, but I found that my mental game was really what kept us in games and kept us competitive. So that's kind of what got me into the whole field.
So what would you exactly say is mental skills training? And I know I went to, when I was at Cap 3, you kind of explained it. And one of the things that I didn't get a chance to ask you, maybe somebody did ask, was how this looks for younger kids versus older kids, or beginner kids versus kids that are playing at a national level.
The way I like to look at it is it's just more tools in the toolbox that you're adding. The actual training can vary from, and I'll say it here and then we can laugh and giggle about it, but the big one is arousal control. Now, right. I will tell you, if you're working with a youth population, especially boys in the 14 to 18 age bracket,
what?
And your slide says arousal control, you're going to lose about 30 minutes of yes, giggling time. So it's really about working on emotional control, focus, motivation. A lot of things that have been done at the pro levels that people thought were really out of reach, and they're really not. And it also crosses over into the business world. You know, there's that big movement. I can't think of her name right now, but she has the show on Netflix about decluttering and all that. We work on that. We're just not decluttering our house. We're just decluttering our training methods or our work ethic and right, working on that. So it's not like, hey, here's a book on mental flexibility and this is it. It's usually catering, you know, seeing what the athlete has or the person has, and then improving on that. So the big thing I like to say is we're not looking to make bad good. We're looking to make good great. So I'm not trying to fix broken things. That's where we kind of get into clinical stuff and psychiatry and, you know, like eating disorders or clinical depression. We're really just working on how to get the most out of our athletes and their training.
Right. So, and it looks the same then for beginner kids and national teams? Because I would love to do this with like my younger kids. And I remember sitting there going, this would be great, but I could barely get their attention for 15 seconds because they're a bunch of 14-year-olds.
It does. And it's just like anything else. You know, what you would say weight train your 14 and under team versus what our national teams are doing is probably pretty different.
Right. Yeah.
But the bases are there. You know, they're probably doing lifts and squats and stuff like that. So that's kind of how we do it. For me, the six key components that I really like to focus on is goal setting, journaling, imagery, self-talk, mindfulness. Was that all six? I feel like I'm forgetting one.
I think that was like five.
It's like I've been doing so many of these webinars and podcasts that you would think that it would be completely, you know, in my brain. But
right.
Relaxation. Yes. Is the sixth one. So, you know, so we start in those components and then I just modify the program as they progress and get older or what they're doing. For example, journaling, what I have my 14U, even my daughter who's playing her first year at 12U, what she journals after practice or a game is completely different than what I was having my AVP or my, you know, PVL pro guys doing.
Right.
It's just a little bit more in depth or a little bit more goal oriented. Whereas I just kind of want the younger age groups to get used to the process of journaling, but also just be open and get the emotional part out. So I'd say the younger group is more about controlling the emotions and the older group is more about being focused on goals and process.
Right. Yeah. One of the things that I did, and I'm journaling is something that I every year I'm like, I should do this. And then I just kind of never remember to get a framework for it and a kind of a plan ahead of time. But what I did this year with my 14-year-olds is I created like a mood board. So we had, you know, a green, a yellow, and a red, and they all had their own little magnet names, and they all had to put down like where they were feeling that day. And so it kind of put things in perspective of where someone was feeling, how, what kind of feedback are you going to give them? And, you know, maybe ways that we could kind of encourage them to, you know, if someone's in the red, like, hey, that was a really great swing, and try to improve their mood a little bit. But the mental skills part, I mean, I really want to do the journaling thing next year. And I feel like I can incorporate that too with, you know, where are we feeling right before practice and after practice?
Yeah, there's not a lot of barriers to introduce that other than the commitment to doing it.
Right.
You can go to Walmart or Staples or whatever and just get a lined rule notebook for a buck and a pen. You know, that's always the concern. Now, obviously, I'm bougie and I like my journal. So
of course,
I'm spending, you know, $30 for a journal. And
right.
I have a very specific pen that I write with. You know, for me, that's a cost barrier. But if you're working with a club and you just want to get them started, I found walking in, and when I work with a club for the first time, I just assume that that's going to be caught. Hey, how many do you have? Okay, there's 30. I spend the $30 at Walmart, get the blank ones, and walk in, and we do one journal page and say, hey, this is how you should journal.
Right.
And it isn't a militant journal style. It's just some people don't know if they're writing too much. Some don't know if they're writing too little. So I just kind of walk through and say, hey, this is what you should expect. This is how you should feel with it. It's not super prompted.
Right.
But I think journaling and breathing are probably the two skills that are the easiest to introduce and also produce the most results in the shortest amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have found myself sometimes at some tournaments when we take a timeout, and, or even at practice, it's kind of getting a little chaotic, you know, we'll call a timeout and be like, all right, everybody take a deep breath in. And everybody's like, and everybody takes a deep breath out. And you could tell, like, they feel so much better. Or we'll like stop in between a match and do some yoga and breathing just to, you know, kind of get them to think about something other than volleyball and just kind of go back to, I am a volleyball player. I'm not caring about the stupid pass that I made like three plays ago. I'm just, all right, I'm in the present. Now it's time for me to go back out on the court. I have found like little baby steps of things like that kind of helpful too with the breathing. Cause I could just imagine with the 14-year-olds, like, all right, breathe in. All right, hold, breathe out. And then they start giggling and goofing off. And, but I think eventually they would probably buy into it.
Yeah. You're going to waste a good solid half hour the first time you introduce it. It's sort of like if you do any meditation, everyone's kind of peeking out the one eye to see who's really doing it and who right. else is looking at who. And with our college team, we have three very specific breathing patterns. We have one for what we call the whistle breathe. I call it the whistle breathing, and it's all basically the same. It's just the duration, which is our really quick breathing sequence for those dead ball plays right before you're about to serve or where you don't have a lot of time. Then we have a cycle that we go through if it's a timeout, because we have a little bit more time. And then we have our long cycle that we do after going through like a side switch or a set switch or the end of a match. We go through a little bit longer. It took a little bit for them to get used to it. And I used the first year, 3 years ago, when we started to incorporate it, I would have to remind them as soon as we timed out, okay, let's do our breathing. And now it's as soon as that whistle, they come over the bench, sit down, and they start to do their breathing. And it's nice because it gives me a pause. It calms them down physically and mentally, but it also gives everyone that pause, like, okay, now what's about to come out of my mouth is really important. Listen and let's go. And I just found like our timeouts are a lot more efficient with the breathing to start it.
Right. I mean, that was actually the next thing I was going to ask, was how important is mental skills training for coaches too? You know, I think it's really great and beneficial for players, but do you see some things that the coaches could, something that they could get out of doing this as well? Not only being able to facilitate, you know, the breathing and the, and that training, but something that'll help them as a coach.
Absolutely. And it's kind of, you got to set the ego aside a little bit with some of it. Some of it's really easy. Again, the breathing. The joke, you know, for me the last couple of years was, is coach even awake on the bench? Because I worked really hard to stay calm. And it's funny because I realized that I went too far to the extreme. And they need that. They need to see me excited a little bit more. So that's actually what I worked on this year, was being a little bit more animated and out of control. Well, in control, but looking like I'm out of control.
Right, yeah.
The other stuff, definitely. The imagery, I actually do go through before a game coaching situations. I know, like, what's my opponent coach going to do? What's their style? You know, there's certain coaches I know that if things start to break down on their team, he goes crazy or she goes crazy, and then it just spreads through their team. So I just think about ways, how are we going to do that? How are we going to visualize and get them in that position where we let them self-destruct?
Right.
Mindfulness, I think every coach should take some sort of mindfulness course, and not just read a few articles, really commit to it and go through mindfulness. All the aspects of it, I think, will definitely help out.
Yeah, this last couple of years, and I think it might be because I stopped doing high school kids I'm taking a little bit of a break from them. I've been doing the 14 and unders, and my model has been relentlessly positive and really encouraging a growth mindset. And I feel like if I on the sideline am freaking out and yelling and screaming, I'm just adding to the chaos of it. But if I look and feel calm on the sidelines and in control, but then goofy and silly when they need it, that kind of helps with them. But it's definitely, ever since I did the 14 and unders, I feel like I've been a lot better with my mental calmness, and kind of encouraging the kids to do the same thing. They don't freak out over the little things anymore. They are, you know, they kind of let things just roll off their shoulders. There's one girl where, and I know we talked about this on VCT a little bit, but I think somebody asked about confidence on the court and, you know, what does lack of confidence look like? And I think BJ may have said, you know, slump shoulders. And you're like, well, I actually disagree about the physical properties of what, you know, confidence looks like. But there was a girl on my team this past year that every time she made a mistake, she would look down on the ground and, like, you know, have her shoulders slump over. And then what I started doing, I was like, hey, hey. And I would call her name and she would all of a sudden put her shoulders back up and look straight ahead and look confident. And I'm like, that's all I had to do, is just kind of like snap her out of it a little bit. But yeah, that's actually one of my questions was, you know, how does the mental skills and that confidence kind of go hand in hand?
You start to, one of the things that we talk about in mindfulness training is the ego, you know, and how we look at things. And that's where the confidence part comes in. I think the problem is we're so quick to get down on ourselves and look at things in a bad manner. And it's not proportionate to how well we look at our successes and get higher up. And I think that's where the confidence disconnect is. For example, you have a player that maybe has a blocking error or, you know, hits the ball out. She's going to hang on to that for a while. But when she gets a great kill, it's just kind of like, meh, it was expected of me.
Exactly.
Because we don't celebrate. It becomes so much of commonplace. We don't celebrate how awesome that is. And when we look at it, when it doesn't happen, we go the opposite way and it's so bad, you know? So I think that's where the big component is for mindfulness, where it comes in like, okay, that was just a hit. It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. It was a hit that cost us a point, or it was a hit that got us a point.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to attach to it. And I apologize if it got loud. My neighbor decided today was the day to cut his lawn.
So oh, it's sure fine.
Okay. But yeah, that's where we run into that issue a little bit. Is I think we're so quick to look at the, and it's not like we're trying to be negative, but we spotlight the negative because we want to work on it and make it better, and right, we forget to spotlight the good.
Yeah, I had a girl that she's been working on a slide. Like she was working on a slide, on my 14U team, and I mean every time it was like bottom of the net, out of bounds, bottom of the net, and I mean I was jumping up and screaming every time she tried, at least made an attempt on it, regardless of how it went. And it took a few of those for her to realize, like, okay, it's not a big deal if I make a mistake. And then when she finally got a kill, it was the ugliest swing approach technical attempt ever. I literally cried on the sideline because I was so proud of her.
on that side, I was blessed for 3 years to assist Jay Hossack, who's the George Mason men's head coach and does our junior national team coaching. When we were doing the PVL pro league and stuff in the US, he was really adamant when it came to serving. Like his saying was anywhere but the net. I don't care if you're jacking the ball off the rafters. I don't care if it's 50 feet out of bounds, as long as it's not hitting the net. And the concept's easy. If it goes over, there's at least a chance something's going to happen where someone correct might play it. But what I really took from that was he is celebrating the effort in that moment. And people don't realize it until it keeps building. And then you just kind of realize like, oh, wait, this wasn't about in or out. This is more about the effort and going for it. So I started to really celebrate those things, like the player running the slide when you least expect it and getting out of their comfort zone. So that's a huge thing. And I'm glad that's kind of where you're at and what you're doing.
Yeah, I tell kids, I don't even care if you hit the ceiling. I don't care if you beam the ball out in the lobby. I don't even care. But I want you to at least go up there and make an attempt on it. And, we can fix the mechanics of that later. But I want you to not feel like it's a terrifying thing to make that sort of risk in a game. So, I'm curious as to if someone was to a coach would go through your mental skills training academy and learn about how they apply this to their team. One of the things that I find is most common among lower level clubs or lower level region clubs is you have that player on the team that is just on the verge of tears on the court after missing like a pass or hitting something out of bounds. And it happens to me, even though I am like relentlessly positive. How did they get there? If you worked on all of these mental skills trainings with the kids, how does that still show up and how do you build them back up?
It's nature. It's just human nature to have those moments. Eventually you just kind of have breakdowns and they're going to happen. Really, the first thing I do is look at, is there anything that triggered it? Was there anything specific to the situation that freaked them out? Is it the crowd? Did, a teammate say something to them pre, post play? Did something trigger it? Or is it purely just emotional exhaustion of wanting to win and working so hard and maybe seeing it slip away or feeling like you're letting the team down? And that's the big one. Disappointment, I guess, is the biggest one that I look at, because there's usually four ways that disappointment happens. You're either worried that you're letting your teammates down, you're worried that you're letting your coach down, you're worried you're letting your parents down, or you're worried that you're letting yourself down.
Yeah.
So I really want to look and see, hey, what's those deals?
Yeah, and I think a lot of times when I talk to the kids and go, what's really going on here? Most of the time it's that they feel like they're letting their teammates down. And that's usually the most common answer I get is I'm letting my teammates down. And I remember one time I took all my kids off to the side after a rough loss. And I said, how many of you guys feel like you're letting your team down? Every single person raised their hand. I said, how many of you guys think that your teammates are letting you down? nobody raised their hands. And I'm like, so it's the perception of it. Everybody here is realistic about everybody's abilities. And, you know, and I don't think anybody here is disappointed with you. You know, I think we're more disappointed with a loss, not really each other.
Yeah. And that's the key, is exactly how you did it. Bring the team in, talk to them, and have them have that chat about it. Because once they realize, like, no, man, I'm not bummed out that you missed that play. You went for it and it didn't work out. And once they start to realize that, it's just their body language and what they might say instantly may seem like they're against you or you're letting them down. But it's really just about that situation in the moment. It's not a personal thing. And that's the problem. You know, this really stems from, I think, a lot of things in general. One of the things that I really tried to combat is the whole, and I know, like, I'm going to get lit up for this, so just be ready for the comments on this
part. I'm ready.
I know that probably 80% of the clubs in any sport, and I'm not even just talking about volleyball. I saw it in a youth hockey club I just worked with. In their handbook has that same policy of, I'm not going to talk to the parents about playing time. I want the kid to come and talk.
Yeah.
Here's the problem that I have with that. We're not training leaders to begin with. So you're asking someone to have a conversation that even as adults is an uncomfortable conversation.
That's true.
And we're throwing kids and telling them, hey, try and figure out, you need to learn how to have these conversations. But we're not really mentoring them to help them through those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion is just change the wording and have it so that you want the parents there, but you also want the player to be there and to help talk through the situation.
Right.
And not just throw it solo. Because the kid's just going to, I mean, what kid at 14, if they came in and said, hey, I feel like I'm not getting playing time, but I'm working really hard. And you say, nope, I got the stats, you're wrong. They're not going to fight you. They're just going to put their head down and leave your office.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not beneficial to everyone. And 3 years ago, I had a team captain at the college level call me out. I pulled her after the first half of a set because I felt like she wasn't producing. And she said, I think you're absolutely wrong in this decision, but I respect you and the policies, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. And she came to my office the next day, and she had stats and film, and she was absolutely right. And I told her from that moment, I said, despite what just happened from a game standpoint, the growth that you just had as a person is going to set you up for life, because you didn't just take for granted that I knew what I was talking about. You questioned it in a respectful manner. I mean, it was a little heated, but it wasn't like it got personal. And I think those are what we need to mentor and what we need to help. We're asking these kids to make really big decisions, but no one's teaching them how to make the decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
The one thing I would like to mention when you said about the coaches and how I do it is I like to have everyone on the same page. So if I'm working with an athlete, even if it's a private client and I get permission from the athlete, I'm telling their coach, this is what we're working on. This is how we're working on it.
Right.
You know, some of the beach athletes, I'm working with 4 beach athletes right now from Georgia, and Kristen and I, their coach, and I talk every week. This is, hey, what we're doing. And just so you know, this is what we're working on. This is what I want her to try, because the last thing I want her to do is to try something mentally, like maybe breathing during a match or some quick imagery, and then the coach like, wait, why are you slowing the pace down, or what's going on?
So it's
a whole package, and it's customized. Like, it's just not a cookie cutter situation.
Right.
But having the coach and the kids on the same page. If you think this is a situation where you're going to drop the kid off at the sports psychologist and you can go run away and do something else in the gym for a little bit and come back, it's just not going to work. You have the coaches have to be a part of it.
Well, it's true. Even like that with, I have kids that do private lessons with me, and they're from another team or even another club. And I'm always like, all right, I don't want to do anything that's your club doesn't agree with, or you have different terminology. I want to make sure we're all on the same page. And if I know them well enough, I'll contact the coach and go, hey, there's what we're working on. Yeah, you have definitely have to have some buy-in and some communication on all fronts.
Yep.
All right. Do you want to plug your stuff, your website, all that fun stuff?
Sure. So before coronavirus and everything, I was I was working on actually transferring everything. Soul Performance is staying, and that's the main company. But I wanted to be a little bit more personal with the blogging and the podcast. So I'm actually moving all the personal and daily updates, I guess you would call them, to danmickle.com. Mm-hmm. And Twitter and all the social media is at realdanmickle.com.
Okay.
The company stuff, the, you know, where you can take our courses or get more information and plans, you can still get at 717soul.com. It used to be, and it still is, soulperformanceacademy.com, but I got really tired of typing that.
Right.
Since I live in the 717, I also got 717soul.com. So that takes you everything. But at 717soul.com is all the company, social media, and the websites. And we sell the performance journal, the Don't Suck Performance Journal.
Yes.
Is available for $20. And that actually, don't suck books.com is getting ready to launch this summer.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And I'm working on a pretty awesome but super secret project while I'm in quarantine. So once this is all over, look for something cool coming out from the book side of things.
I am so excited. See, this is the thing about quarantine is going to make all of us pretty cool. We have like all these new projects. I finally got around to doing my podcast 4 months later. So I guess there's some positive that's coming out of it.
I put everything on pause as I was transitioning everything over to danmickle.com. So I haven't done a podcast or really any blogs or anything because I was moving it and changing formats. And but I have a whole book now full of what I'm ready to start recording and doing.
Right.
And, yeah, my Google Drive, my Dropbox, everything's nice and clean and organized.
I saw you talking about that. Oh, I was like, that is a dream of mine, is to clean up my Dropbox, because I have like volleyball, and then within volleyball, I have each folder for every team I've coached for the last 7 years and all of their practice plans. And I just have random volleyball, like a sheet of like a court. So I was using it for a drill or just some random stuff. And I go, one of these days, I'm just going to sit here and clean up my Dropbox.
I try and schedule an hour to 2 hours a night and organize, and I tag everything now. That was the big thing. Mm. I never was a tagger, but now that I'm tagging and someone's like, hey, do you have that breathing script? And I'm like, breathing script. And it comes up because now I'm like,
I need to do that.
I would highly suggest starting to tag.
So much stuff.
And the other thing I'm doing is I'm updating our mindfulness course, and I'm going to make it available at like an 80% discount.
Okay.
It's going to be $20. It's an 8-week online course. The revamp should be available in the next week or so. With us at the college and some of our volleyball clubs in the area losing a lot of camp opportunities and fundraising, I'm dropping the price from $150 down to $20, and all the proceeds are going to go to the college and to some of the other clubs in the area to help them, you know, make it up. So,
awesome. That's really cool.
But yeah, I would love to, you know, have more people and pump your stuff. So I'm excited to grow this network and get it all out there.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. And I'm sure I'll come up with another thing and I'll go, oh, me and Dan should talk about this. So you'll be on call for another one.
Anytime. I love it.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Sarah.